Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Today, we'll explore pandemic adaptation in the arts from two perspectives. First, a celebration of the success beyond expectations of a Spokane tradition in the making, Art on the Go. We'll talk with principals Denny Carman and Morgan Walters. Then, onto a meditation mixing conversation and music from the, yes, canceled for this year, Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival. Festival director Timothy Christie offers both regrets and some plans for interestingly varied virtual performances coming up soon. Taking us in is some of Robert Schumann's music from a previous Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival. This is Northwest Arts Review. View art from your vehicle. From somewhat out there idea from artist Denny Carman's imagination to very successful trial run with immediate calls for more, Art on the Go is now scheduled for its second outing June 6th. I checked in with Denny Carman for an evaluation of the event's first go, then got a notion of what may be different in June with Morgan Walters, area artist who has agreed to carry Art on the Go forward. Denny, you shepherded a very successful event, which was Art on the Go. Remind us again about what that was and just what got it underway.
Well, what got it underway was I tried to get artists to put art in our windows to kind of let people see some art from our local artists when they're driving around. And then my good friend Alice Harmon, who's another artist, contact me and mention how about we put art in front yards of artists' homes and then have people drive around and check out the art. And as soon as I put the word out to everybody, to all my artist friends and everything, it just got legs and took off. Everybody was very excited about it.
And it was basically an event that got recognized through social media, that it was your Facebook page that was the first way that most everybody found out about it. Yes?
Yeah. Yeah, I do most of my contacting artists on Facebook, and that's where I got all the feedback from everybody. I put a post up, and I talked to probably 1,400 artists. So as soon as I put something up, everybody either jumps on board or doesn't.
And it really attracted attention because you got articles in both the Spokesman Review locally and the Inlander as well. So nice going on that. So how did it all go? And the first thing we should note is that you got a pass from the weather on that one, didn't you? Because there was some nasty stuff coming in.
It was a close one. I was very worried because when we set all up, looking at the clouds, it was supposed to be a big storm coming in. But it held off and felt basically right till the end of the whole event, till that evening. So it went great.
All right.
A little bit of wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The muses smiled on you, obviously, on that one. What was your impression of it from where you stood through it, and what have you heard from your artist friends?
Well, as far as where I was at, I was located basically next to your station there, next to Spokane Art Supply, and the line of cars was just, it amazed me. I wasn't, because you never know. Mm-hmm. When you put something like this together, you do everything you can to get the word out, like you said, to the different papers and the TV and stuff. But you don't know, because you don't know if people are going to take that chance. But it, where I was at, there was car after car. Everybody was very respectful, stayed in their cars, came by, waved. A few got out, and it went just fantastic and nothing but positive comments. And then after the event was over the next day, I got contacted, so did my friend Morgan, by all the artists, and they were just excited, said they had a blast. Most of them said they had over 30 or 40 cars come by each one of their homes. And what shocked me, truthfully, because I wasn't planning or even knowing that they were going to sell, but a lot of the artists contacted me and said they got contacted and they all sold. Mm. A lot of them sold quite a bit of work. So that was just a big plus on top of it.
Absolutely.
It turned out so good for these artists and everybody that, I think I mentioned that we're going to do it annually, but nobody wanted to wait a year. So everybody said, can you please have another one soon and not wait a year? So that's why we're having a second one on June 6th.
All right, and we can hope that the weather will have just made up its mind that it's going to be pretty much summer at that point. You don't have to deal with that.
Oh, it's going to be sunny and beautiful.
Right.
I won't let it do anything else.
Absolutely. We'll be talking in a moment to Morgan Walters, who is going to be the shepherd this time around. Was it just that you could see your future increasingly being taken over by events like this that you decided to hand it off?
I think, as you know, my plate's pretty full. I'm going every which way when it comes to the community and art. So with Art Chowder and everything I do, it's just gotten to that point where I just really love when ideas come to me or somebody gets a hold of me. I love building up an event or building up a show. And then if it takes off and it looks like a future in it, then I find somebody, an artist that I can trust, that will take it into the future and maybe build it even better. So I just don't have the time to take care of everything. So then that's why Morgan was right by my side to this event, did an amazing job. And so I'm handing it to her. And she's already built the team and going to take it forward in the future. And I see it growing and growing. That's going to be amazing.
And now we meet Art on the Go's new muse, Morgan Walters. How did you first get connected with it? I mean, what was your first entree? Was that through just hearing about it and thinking about preparing some pieces for it, or what?
As with everything, Denny and I were messaging one night, and he told me about Alice's idea. And then from that, he asked if I could make a nice-looking thing for the addresses, you know, just type them out. And I thought, what if we made him a map? Mm-hmm. I had recently made a map, little scavenger hunt thing for one of my friend's daughters for her to do in the backyard. And so I still had a basic template on the computer. And when Denny brought up Art on the Go, I thought, well, who doesn't like maps? And then that could get kids involved and, you know, just pile everybody in the car and let's go on this art scavenger hunt. So it really just kind of snowballed overnight, really.
Yeah, it was a neat way to do it. Each of the pages was a journey around a limited geographical space where you could just drive from one artist's location to the next. So it was nicely done that way.
Well, thank you. We never expected it to blow up as fast as it did. So Denny was messaging me up until 10:45 the night before adding artists. And that's why this one, you know, we've got a cutoff date. So we expected maybe 25. And within 10 days, we had over 60 artists. So it was just every time my phone went off, I knew something was happening.
So you just began to be more and more involved in the entire process and the reality of this thing then. When did Denny pop the question so far as asking you to take over the reins of Art on the Go?
We spoke about it a little bit in the beginning, and then when we made the decision to move forward with a second show, that's when he started talking about handing over the reins. He's got so much going on, and with making the maps and doing what we did, he just really enjoyed what I did. And I told him, you know, if we're going to continue this, definitely need to get a team together, which I've already got people signing on now. Brandy, she's going to help me out, and we've got other artists who are willing to donate their time and energy into making posters, or it's just really taking off. We've got videos made. People are going around taking photos for us and sending them to our video person, Beth Hart. She's doing wonderful. I mean, we've really got a great team forming.
So the next Art on the Go is going to be on the 6th of June. And are there specific changes that you either have implemented already or are considering implementing as far as any part of the project that you might care to mention?
Well, we talked to a lot of the people who stopped by our station, and the only thing we heard was that the maps could be confusing. So what we're going to do this time is try to do it all by zip code, so that way everybody can stay in their location. But it's really going to depend also on how many artists of each type we're going to have. Our last Art on the Go, it was mostly the visual arts and painters and such. But with this Art on the Go, we're trying to get performance artists and musicians and just get people out and engaged. And depending on how many artists we have of each type, I may put in some surprises there. And of course, you know, if this progresses and keeps going through past the quarantine, I mean, we could make this a really, really fun and engaging event for a lot of people. So we're excited about the future with how fast it's taken off. We've already reached our 60 artists, and there's still half a month left for registration.
Have you expanded the geographical area? Weren't there artists as far away as Cheney on the
first
go? Oh,
absolutely. We had artists sign up as far as Coeur d'Alene, Cheney, Airway Heights. It went so far past Spokane, what we had originally planned, but it depends on who we have available, and I'm trying to get some of the other counties involved. I don't live in Spokane County, so I'm trying to expand a little that way, and I know people would like to be involved, and even some family members out of state in Missouri, oh, it would be so great if we could get that here. Well, let me think about some things, and let me see what I can do, but it's wherever we go from for it.
Right. You never know. There may be a national edition of Art on the Go one of these days. Well, it really sounds as though you have taken the reins firmly in hand and are driving the team, to continue the farm metaphor here. You're driving the team on toward the goal here of the next Art on the Go. Morgan Walters, congratulations and our best wishes to you. And I'm sure that come June 6th, we're going to have a great Art on the Go session.
Thank you. We're really looking forward to it.
Curious to know more? Search Facebook for Spokane's Art on the Go Art Show for latest news about the event, plus images of some of the work on view June 6th. I'm Jim Tevenin. This is Northwest Arts Review. Check out our podcast at SpokanePublicRadio.org or wherever fine pods reside. There is a kind of multi-sensory magic that surrounds summer music festivals. How about hearing a Mozart string quartet in the inviting coolness of a winery's barrel room, perhaps while sipping a glass of, you get the idea. Experiences like this have been the essence of the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival since 2007, and make for an especial sadness now that this year's festival program has been canceled due to the COVID-19 crisis. But that cancellation of live performances has not removed the festival's presence from the summer. Rather, founding artistic director Timothy Christie has found a unique way of understanding and dealing with this troubled time, beginning with viewing the situation as more of a suspension, an extended silence known in music as a grand pause.
We had to cancel, and there's part of it that doesn't hurt quite so bad because there's no agency. No one did this to the festival. It's a reality that we just have to face. And in a way, that makes it better because you don't say, what if I had done this or what if we had done that? It is, you know, and you can't ignore it. It's also not lost on me that our musicians come from all over North America, including New York City, Chicago, Atlanta, Charleston, South Carolina, just in the West Coast and in Walla Walla proper. Now you bring those people from diverse communities together and then look at a classical music audience. And while our audience is fairly diverse in terms of age, I would say like most classical arts organizations, there's a certain concentration of demographics around the sort of retirement age, we'll say. And it's just, as far as public health is concerned, a recipe for disaster, mingling these various groups of people, some of whom are at particular risk. So I'm glad we made the decision that we did as early as we did, because it's allowed us to pivot and plan and take a different approach to the June festival coming up in just over 3 weeks.
Right. And you phrase it, as we've been talking about, interestingly, as a grand pause. And on your website, it says it's the mother of all rests. It's coordinated and intentional silence. And the point is that there is not a usual value that a grand pause has. It can be just a couple of beats, or it can be some substantial silence. Part of that is the nature of the piece. Part of that is the taste of whoever is managing this pause, whether it's a soloist or a conductor. It is really a good parallel to the situation in which you are, because you're not quite sure of when and how you're going to be able to resume with this audience in that place.
And, you know, the other thing about a grand pause is that it's completely unifying. And, you know, if the composer of a piece of music has all these choices at his or her disposal of what instruments to use and how to use them and what notes to compose, what rhythms to compose, how it all comes together, that variability is something that, you know, great composers, of course, have a sense of both large scale and detailed microsecond to microsecond organization. But their most powerful tool is silence. And when I think of music that has these extended and unifying pauses during which there's a great sense of anticipation, what follows is in every case something spectacular. Mm-hmm. And I prefer the optimism of looking at it that way. This may be a particularly pregnant grand pause, but what comes after will surely be spectacular.
What kinds of plans have you made? What kinds of leeways have you given for continuation of the festival activities?
Well, so I've been in contact with all the artists who are sequestered in their various locales in lockdown. And, you know, as I've communicated with them, I said, you know, we have to share one of the unintended benefits of this, which is I'm sure you're all practicing very hard. And we're all going to level up in terms of sort of virtuosity. And of course, I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but during the busy concert season, we don't always have the time to practice in a comprehensive way. There's a practicing that's always ongoing, which has a lot to do with, hey, what's next? Mm-hmm. And the music stand populates with the repertoire that one has coming up, whether it be orchestral or chamber music or concertos or recitals, whatever, gigs even. But when you have removal of this regular and often challenging schedule of perpetual performing, you get to step back and look at certain foundational elements. You get to practice like you practiced when you were a student a little bit more than like you've practiced as a professional. And I see that potentially bearing a lot of fruit as we come out of this. So I'm saying this to the musicians sort of in jest, but also recognizing that, you know, there may be some real interesting upsides to everyone pausing their work as it's been going on in their careers and looking at it a little bit differently. So I wanted to get a window into the lives of festival musicians, see how they're doing, see what they're doing, see if there's any way to provide a glimpse of their experience. I think one of the things that the festival does a good job of, and what I've tried to design it to do, is to focus much more on the process of music making than the product of a concert. Of course, we want the concerts to be great. We want them to be high level and showcase excellence. But we want people to be engaged and involved along the way. And so things like the Portrait of an Artist series or the Tasting Music series, or even our almost daily open rehearsals, offer people a chance to participate in a different way, get to know the artists individually, get to know pieces of music in greater depth, and to see it from rough draft through the performance where we're wearing ties and gowns and look dressed. dressed up for the occasion. And I think we're going to be able to do that with readily available resources for video and audio recording, et cetera. So we're going to unfurl a four-phased approach involving some personal greetings from the musicians, involving maybe some humorous sketches that we're putting together of lockdown situations, and then some sincere performances that we will sort of unveil on a daily basis during the festival. And then I'm going to try to recreate what has become an annual tradition at the festival, which is a performance called Collage, where we mix and match all sorts of different musical styles and perform them without pauses. So there's no chance for applause or chance for things to sort of settle. The end of one piece dovetails with the beginning of the next. Mm-hmm. And so out of all the artists' various contributions, we will, using the power of editing, create sort of a grand finale collage performance. And so the schedule of dates isn't quite solved yet. They'll take place between June 4th and June 27th, which are the festival dates. But since we're producing the raw materials right now, I don't have a clear sense of what's going to happen on what day. But stay tuned. We're working hard behind the scenes. And these videos will all be published in a private YouTube channel. And people will send out the link or make it known, and people can sort of opt in and choose to follow it along on a daily basis as if it's a festival, or they can wait until it's populated with all manner of content and sort of shop around at their leisure. But that's what we're doing to try and, you know, do our version of love in the time of cholera, mm-hmm. Except with music in the time of coronavirus.
Right. Well, it's amazing to me, the creativity that has emerged from this in terms of keeping visibility going and keeping the spirit of ensembles and of performance alive. The skills that have been learned along the way are really remarkable too. People who never thought that they would be doing video editing and or production to share with their audience or with their friends. Again, it's one of those things where there is some good to be found in it as we discover new things about ourselves and what we're capable
Absolutely.
Of doing. Much more on the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival, including Tim Christie's thoughts on the current grand pause, are at the festival website, wwcmf.org. Another aspect of summer music festivals is the alternate performance and personal experiences they provide for musicians. A couple of years ago, I talked with various musicians participating in the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival. To close Northwest Arts Review this week, here are a couple of those brief chats.
Hi, I'm Norbert Lewandowski. I'm the principal cellist for the Charleston Symphony in South Carolina. This is my 10th summer coming to Walla Walla. I've been here since the very beginning, one of the, I guess, founding musicians with the Chamber Music Festival. We're all very close friends with the artistic director, Tim Christie. He and I were roommates together at the Aspen Music Festival in 1997. So he and I have known each other for 20 whole years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the festival like in the very earliest days?
Well, it was just as it is now, great music, great performances. I think we were still maybe getting our legs under us in terms of how to give the best presentations. I remember some of the, just organizationally, some of the first outdoor performances, winery performances that we had. You know, we brought 75 chairs and 100 people showed up. So, but, you know, the resourcefulness of the local community, everyone kind of pitched in. People grabbed folding chairs out of the back of their trucks and everyone found a place. But we've tightened up some of those loose ends, and now I think it is a great festival that's able to present music and art in a variety of different spaces, not just the theater that we're in tonight, but indoors, outdoors, informal, more formal settings, many different venues around the community. The highlight for me this year was the first winery program that we did, and also the first theater program was Schubert's Cello Quintet, kind of a jewel in the chamber music repertoire, and for any cellist, it's a dream come true, getting to play alongside another great cellist in Katri Ervama. She's one of Tim's former colleagues at the University of Michigan, so it was great playing with her, and it's a really big piece, and I think because of its size, doesn't get programmed all that often. So I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to perform that and many other great works here in Walla Walla.
I'm Weston Sprott. I'm a trombonist from New York City. I play in the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and I also do some teaching in the area at Rutgers University, Manus, and Bard College. This is my first time at the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival. It was Tim Christie, the founder of the festival, contacted me and asked me if I was interested. I think my colleague Billy Hunter, who's also been a member of the festival, I think now for a couple of years, recommended me because I think Tim really wanted to do Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale, which we performed last night, and of course that needs a trombone player, and Billy and I have done that piece together countless times, so I think he said you should give Weston a call if you want this thing to go together nice and easy. I'm having a great time. I think it's a really wonderful festival. It's clear that the community really supports the festival, and I think it's really unique. They have all of these concerts in a really eclectic set of venues. In all the years I've been playing the trombone and playing at different festivals all over the world, I've never seen such a wide variety of venues playing in different vineyards and things like that. Also, the style of the concerts are very interesting. I think the programming is really, really intelligently done. The collage concert is something that's very unique, and also thought the Portrait of an Artist concert with Billy Hunter was also kind of a unique thing. It's almost like mixing a recital with an episode of Inside the Actor Studio. Well, my time here, as the things that I'm going to be playing, is relatively short this year. So I did the Soldier's Tale last night, and tonight I'm going to be performing the Brahms Four Serious Songs, which of course is originally for baritone voice, but it lays really well for the trombone. It's about 18 minutes long, and I think it's a really fantastic piece, and I hope people will enjoy hearing it.
Recorded in 2017, the thoughts of two Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival participants, Norbert Lewandowski and Weston Sprott. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. We're grateful today for the assistance of Denny Carmen, Morgan Walters, and Timothy Christie. Thanks as well to the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival and its musicians. If you have ideas about guests we should invite onto the program, let us know about it. Either email kpbx@kpbx.org or call our listener comment line, 509-232-6904. We go out with a bit more Schumann from the Walla Walla Chamber Music Festival. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.